But what does all this mean, and how often do stockholders get involved in relatively minor matters like a settlement with GSA?
Well, obviously, the cases that GSA and the Justice Department have brought have been endemic in the government contracts industry for people who sold products to the government, and there's lots of these settlements, and some of them are for very large amounts like this one. The securities bar, the people who argue that their clients who are shareholders have been defrauded are sort of a blight on the legal landscape and have been for many years. And this is just a new form of the securities litigation that often has no basis. And of course, on occasion, there are cases that do. But this one alleges that you shouldn't have spent money on the defense of the case, that you should have just paid up. And of course, that's not how the world works.
So does this, in situations like this, is it usually just a lone shareholder acting alone, or is it more a precursor to lots and lots of people raising the same issues and possibly big problems for the company?
It's generally a handful of shareholders who are working with a plaintiff's law firm. The plaintiff's law firm is in the business of suing corporations over security violations, and they think up these new theories and then they go after it. But it wouldn't be a precursor to a large number of shareholders. What they will argue is that they represent a class of those shareholders.
So is, in the age that we're living in, do shareholders see, or certain groups of shareholders that you've mentioned, see everyone as the next Madoff or John Corzine?
Not really. You know, look, shareholders can be disappointed legitimately and have a cause of action. For example, let's say a company gets into a very serious piece of litigation and they don't disclose it adequately on their securities registration. In other words, you have a duty to say material things that may threaten the future of the company. In essence, when you don't do that, you violated the securities law, and then it would be legitimate to bring the suit. This one is sort of, hard to respect because it's in essence arguing that you shouldn't have defended yourself, you should have just paid up, and in essence that you defrauded the shareholders by paying the legal fees to defend yourself in the suit. And of course, anybody who knows the Justice Department is usually that they've asked for way more than you're going to settle the case for, because you have defenses, because you have facts and legal theories that are in conflict with the Justice Department's legal theories. So I think this one probably doesn't have any legs, but of course I'm not involved in it. And you're looking on from a distance and can only guess what it's going to, what the outcome will be.
Stephen Ryan leads the Government Strategies Practice Group at McDermott, Will and Emery, and we're talking about a suit by an Oracle investor against the company following a $200 million settlement with the federal government. Now, if I'm an Oracle executive or an executive at another company that has just done this and faces a lawsuit from a shareholder, would this have any bearing, or should it have any bearing on my future decisions when it comes to working with the government?
Absolutely not. I mean, you make a careful decision whether you should settle litigation like this. And if we go back, the real problem is that when we contract with the federal government, the Justice Department can come in later and argue that you didn't fully disclose all of your discounts, or you didn't do something adequately, even though at the time either the DCAA or the GSA auditors actually looked at the contract. So there's a fundamental problem there. And the other problem is the American rule on legal fees. Let's say that Oracle were to win this suit, it will not recover its legal fees in the matter against the shareholders, so they'll be out the legal fees. So in essence, you just have to fight on. It's a cost of doing business, and it's one of the least attractive aspects of the American legal system.
It might be worth reviewing how these suits by the government work, especially over fraudulent pricing, because I think in the case of very large companies like Oracle and very large agencies, there are so many factors, so many discount programs a company may have. It might not be intentional on the part of management to try to defraud the government, even though the effect of a pricing action may look that way.
Well, look, Silicon Valley companies had very complex pricing structures, and change their product quite often. And in those instances, they also might, for example, at the end of a quarter, have programs that they were trying to drive sales through in their commercial side. And then the argument always is, should that discount have been given to the government? Was the government qualified to receive the discount? Or at the inception of the contract, had all of those programs been disclosed so that the government could get the benefit of it when it negotiated the price? And that's the essence of the problem. And I think that's a very serious problem for government contracting, because when you defend one of these cases, you're in essence asked to go back 7, 10 years and defend things where the records no longer exist, or where the data systems are no longer being supported because you've shut them off. So you have a lot of problems, and at a certain point, we ought to contract and say that's the contract, and let the government do any amount of due diligence it wants on the way into the contract. But once the contract is set, it ought to be set.
So to summarize all this, if you are publicly held and you're facing one of these kinds of pricing lawsuits by the government, it's probably a wise course to go ahead and fight it if you think you have a good case, but maybe also tell shareholders that you are fighting it and why you are.
That's right. Exactly, Tom. I mean, you've got 101 law for the day.